Okay, let's restart. Welcome back, everybody, from your virtual or your offline coffee break. Before we restart with the next two talks, I would like to make two quick announcements. First of all, we would like to continue the poster session on a Slack channel, for which I'm posting the invite right here in the chat. So you can continue discussions on posters, and you can also connect with the poster presenters to then maybe meet in Remo or Zoom or whatever your preferred method of video conferencing is. Also, we'd like to encourage everybody to make use of Remo for the coffee breaks, to continue the discussions and for informal chats and to connect or reconnect with colleagues. We would recommend that you try out Remo at least once before we then use it for our virtual conference dinner on Thursday. I'd also like to ask everybody for who the connection allows to do so to please let your video on during the talk and also during the question sessions. That's just more of an interactive atmosphere. And so now I'd like to introduce our first speaker. So Frank Saueressig has actually worked on a number of different approaches to quantum gravity, and today he's putting on his asymptotic safety hat to tell us about asymptotically safe amplitudes from the quantum effect of action. Questions will be after the talk, so you're free to post questions into the chat, either to everybody or just to me during the talk, and then I will read them out later. And so Frank, whenever you're ready, you're welcome to start. Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Astrid, for the nice introduction. So let me take the opportunity to thank the organizers to putting up this very nice conference. So it's amazing how this evolves. So we are going to review asymptotic safety in the talk. So let me start with giving some acknowledgements. So this covers some very recent developments in the program. Here I should first mention the article by John Donoghue, which put forward a critique on the asymptotic safety program recently. So part of the critique is he asked two questions. So typically asymptotic safety computes the scale dependence of Newton's constant and the cosmological constant. Can this be compatible with effective field theory amplitudes? And is there a Lorentzian version of asymptotic safety? Now, following up on this, there was the community getting together and asking themselves, okay, what are the open questions that we really should address in this program? And also this article has been put out. So this is probably a treasure trove of collected knowledge, but probably not an easy read. But then there was also a further development. So within a small collaboration, including Benjamin Knorr, Chris Ripken, and a student at Radboud, Tom Trapper, we definitely looked into the questions that were posed by Donoghue. And in the end, we found very surprising answers that go way beyond the questions that he actually posed. So this really triggered some progress in the field. And much of the talk will be reviewing these ideas that emerged from this. So let me give a brief outline what we are going to do. So first there will be setting the scene. We will talk about amplitudes. So I will introduce the basic framework. Then there will be a part covering recent developments in asymptotic safety. And then I will move to a way broader framework discussing form factors in quantum gravity. So first, the general framework will be discussed, and then there will be the idea about how asymptotic safety can be embedded in this one. So let's start with setting the scheme of scattering amplitudes and the scattering of particles. So most of the talk will focus on the scattering of scalar particles in a 2x2 process. So we have two ingoing particles with momentum p1, p2. They interact at the point. Outgoing are two other particles with momentum p3, p4. Then what you can measure is the scattering angle between the ingoing and outgoing particles. If you look at such a process in terms of quantum mechanics, then you encode the physics in terms of an amplitude, which relates the in and the out states of this problem. Typically, this amplitude A is parameterized by the Mandelstam variables. So here S is the center of mass energy of the progress, and the T and the U variable can be expressed in terms of the center of mass energy and scattering angle. So now, if you have such a process in quantum field theory, you typically compute the amplitude by doing the corresponding Feynman diagrams. So let's have a look how this works in terms of general relativity. So the simple setting that you can set up is the Einstein-Hilbert action, minimally coupled to two scalar fields. So here's the action. This part is the meta part with the minimally coupled scalar fields. And here it's the gravitational dynamics. Now let's look at the scattering amplitude, which describes the scattering of phi phi goes to the scalar particles chi chi. So you can start from your action. You can put this into a flat Minkowski background. You can derive the Feynman rules for this process. You can compute the amplitude for the associated with the Feynman diagram given here. The result is well known. It can be expressed in terms of Mandelstam variables. So you have Newton's coupling going in here, and then the combination T times U divided by S. Now, if you take a large S limit of this amplitude, you see the amplitude grows with the center of mass energy. So that can easily be understood from dimensional analysis. So Newton's coupling has mass dimension minus 2. The amplitude is dimensionless. So you have to compensate the mass dimension of Newton's coupling by energy squared, and this is sitting in the S here. So this is not so good, but you can also consider the amplitude for a process where you have phi chi goes to phi chi. So this you can obtain from the result that we had previously by crossing symmetry. And then you find that if you keep your variable t fixed, this amplitude actually grows like s squared. Now, this is also not very good. And then you can ask what happens in terms of quantum corrections to these divergency. What do quantum corrections do? And typically they just aggravate the divergences that you encounter here in terms of the energy. What are the takeaway messages of this analysis? So first, you can treat gravity as effective field theory. So systematically, you can compute corrections in a small parameter, S times Gn, as long as this small effective field theory works. But this will break down if your energy approaches the Planck scale. Now then, there could be the need for new physics. Typically, string theory will resolve the growth of the amplitude by introducing extra massive degrees of freedom. So you dress up the GR amplitudes and complete them into Veneziano or Shapiro, Virasoro-Shapiro amplitudes. Now, question is there an alternative in which we can cure these divergences in terms of the framework of a quantum field theory? Naturally, there are some proposals of theories which should achieve this, asymptotic safety being one of them. So the focus will be on the last part of the talk. So what has quantum field theory to say about the previous slide? So before going into this question, let's quickly review traditional asymptotic safety. So the main idea underlying asymptotic safety is that we deal with the gravitational theory, and the high energy completion of this theory is provided by an interacting fixed point of the randomization group. This fixed point has been given a name, so by now it's called the Reuter fixed point. And this should control the high energy behavior of the theory. Now, if you have such a fixed point, then you can study the RG flow of the fixed point in its vicinity. Typically, the fixed point will come with UV attractive directions and UV repulsive directions. And asymptotic safety states that your theory should sit on a surface where the RG trajectory is actually attracted into the fixed point at high energies. This has the charm that it equips the construction with predictive power, actually. So you see the trajectories that hit the fixed point span a subspace in the space of all theories that you can write down. So in order to sit on the surface, you have to satisfy certain relations between coupling constants in your theory, and these relations can be turned into predictions. So now, the important statement of asymptotic safety in this context is, so if you have an RG trajectory which ends at such a fixed point at high energies, then your theory will not develop UV divergences. Now, having the fixed point itself will be not enough to make this a good and valid theory of quantum gravity. So certainly the fixed point will be one ingredient, but then you have to ask more. So the second point that you want to demand is that the construction is actually predictive. So this is linked to a structural property of the fixed point. So you need to have a finite dimensional UV critical surface. Then you can fix all the freedom of your construction with a finite number of measurements and actually do predictions of other coupling constants. You also want to have the structure that at low energies you are compatible with the observable world. So this makes the construction falsifiable. So you want to reproduce what has been observed in terms of general relativity. And if you also include metafields in the construction, then in principle, standard model and collider physics offer a plethora of additional tests for your construction. Finally, there are some structural demands that you want to impose on your theory. So probably you want to have no space-time singularities and have unitarity as one of the guiding principles in setting this up. So now the tool that has been used to actually explore asymptotic safety extensively is functional normalization, foremost the Wetterich equation. The basic idea of this construction is that you start with a gravitational path integral. You integrate out quantum fluctuations in the sense of a Wilsonian RG field. So you order the fluctuations according to some momentum space prescription, and then you integrate them out shell by shell in momentum space. In terms of the equation itself, so what you have, this provides information on how a given theory changes once you integrate out quantum fluctuations. So in principle, you can use these equations, combine it with an initial condition at some scale lambda, and then you can solve the equation to see where this action flows to once you integrate out all quantum fluctuations. In this case, you want to recover the standard effective action. Now you can do more. Since you don't need to pose an initial action for solving this equation a priori, you can also use it to search for fixed points. And this is the key strength of the formalism in connection with asymptotic safety. Now there are some conceptual remarks related to this equation. So first, you don't postulate the existence of fixed points. So you have the equation set up, given here, and either your theory possesses suitable fixed points or it doesn't. But you can check the existence of fixed point based on solutions of this equation. Secondly, if you want to match physics from this construction to our real world, you should do so at the level of the effective action. So you start from your fixed point action, you integrate down to the point where you have integrated out all quantum fluctuations, then you get the effective action, And this is the object that encodes the physics. Thirdly, we discussed this before, if you have a fixed point, this fixed point will reflect itself in relations between the couplings that you have in gamma. Now, how can we actually solve this equation? So exact solutions are out of reach, at least for the time being. So you want to have approximate approximation schemes which you can use to construct solutions. A systematic scheme to do such approximate solution is the derivative expansion of your gravitational action. So in principle, you assert that power counting is a good ordering principle, even if you look at non-perturbative fixed points. So the simple starting point is you would approximate the gravitational effective action by Einstein-Hilbert, and then systematically add higher derivative terms to the construction. So the next layer would result in adding four derivative terms, and you go up and up. Now there are a couple of results that have been obtained in this way. So if in terms of the pure gravitational theory, one finds that two-loop counter terms are actually harmless when it comes to asymptotic safety. There is a low number of free parameters in the construction. And if you pair asymptotic safety with cosmological observations, you might be able to get the theory in such a corner that you get Starobinsky inflation correctly, fixing all the three free parameters that you have in the construction. Also, there has been tremendous progress in order to combine gravity with matter systems. So the two key insights that have emerged in the last couple of years are the insight that gravity coupled to standard model matter exhibits a randomization group fixed point similar to the one that we have in pure gravity. And also that the predictive power of this fixed point could actually be higher than the free field fixed point that you know from the standard model. As a consequence, the construction might be able to predict parameters or posting parameters that can be accessed in collider experiments. Now, there are also a list of open questions which are still pending their final answer. So the number of free parameters, we have no proof of this one. The low energy physics, is this really the one that we need to get to describe all observational data that we have? Can we pinpoint the meta content that is actually compatible with asymptotic safety? Then can we characterize the fluctuating geometry of the construction? And then also questions related to the degrees of freedom related to the RG fixed point and unitarity. Now, if you take this list and pair it with the approximation method of a derivative expansion, then you find that in particular for the last two questions, a derivative expansion will fail automatically. So just by the nature of the approximation, you introduce spurious degrees of freedom and you will never be able to answer the question about unitarity just because you build on a approximation that will violate unitarity by construction. The question is, can we do better? And the idea is to move from a derivative expansion to a curvature expansion. So instead of ordering everything according to the number of space-time derivatives, you should introduce free functions of the momenta. So these functions will be called form factors. And these are actually the objects that will allow you to answer the questions on the previous slide. So once you move from a derivative expansion to a curvature expansion, you can make meaningful statements about the degrees of freedom and the unitarity of the theory. Now, how should one set up such a program? So the core idea is to look at an object, the quantum effective action. So by definition, this guy contains all the quantum corrections to your theorem. So in particular, Feynman diagrams or scattering amplitudes can be obtained from this object by evaluating tree-level diagrams. Typically, getting this object from first principle is hard, but what we can do is we can systematically parameterize this one. So here's the example for a gravity scalar theory. So you have a gravitational part of the action, there will be a gauge fixing part and scalar matter for the purpose of the talk. So for the gravitational part, one has the Einstein-Hilbert action, and then there are two form factors that come into the game. So one is associated with the R squared term, and the second one is associated with the square of the Y tensor. Now, if you expand this in gravitational fluctuations around flat space, the functions FR and FC contain all the information that you need in order to construct the graviton propagators. Also, there's no more room to add additional momentum dependence to these propagators. So everything has to fit into this framework. Now, in order to compute scattering amplitudes, you also need to equip the construction with a gauge fixing term. And here we opted for a standard gauge fixing with two free parameters, alpha and beta. Now, the third ingredient is the matter sector. So here, there are two types of interactions that come into the game. So scalar fields can act with a graviton. So this first part is the scalar kinetic term. And then in a curvature expansion, you can add interaction monomials which couple two scalars to the scalar curvature or the Ricci curvature and introduce momentum dependent functions for these term sets as well. So here the notation is that the Laplacian with index one will act on R, the one with two will act on the second field and so on. Final ingredient, we can allow self-interactions. So these are sitting here. The phi field can interact with the phi field through scalar self-interaction. You can also introduce phi to the four terms, but these will not be relevant for the present construction. So also here you can be systematic in a derivative expansion. Now, once you have this as an input, you can derive the most general scattering amplitude associated with the graviton-mediated scattering of phi phi goes to chi chi. So here's it. Here it is. Essentially, it contains two parts. So the first two lines give the contribution of the spin 2 part of the graviton. The last two lines give the contribution of the spin 0 part. About remarkable properties of the result that we have here is, first, it's gauge invariant. So previously I introduced an arbitrary class of gauge fixing. What you find is once you are on shell, these parameters drop out. So you are dealing with a genuine gauge invariant object. Secondly, and this is also important, the object itself is invariant under a redefinition of your graviton fluctuations, in particular momentum dependent redefinitions. So the construction is such that the contributions of the vertices and the propagators precisely cancel such redefinitions. So we are looking at a good physical object here, and in particular, this is the most general amplitude that you can construct from a quantum field theory framework with this input. Now, it's useful to illustrate the working of this by means of an example. First idea is we want to separate out the angular dependence of the amplitude. This is done by going to partial waves. So the partial waves contain the energy dependence of the amplitude. The first natural example to look at is actually classical stellar gravity with minimally coupled scalars. So in this one case, the form factors take a very specific form. So they are given here, they are just constants. And in order to get the dimensionality right, they are proportional to Newton's coupling. Now you can substitute this choice into the general amplitude that we have before and compute the two partial wave amplitudes coming from this. So only A0 and A2 are non-zero, all other partial waves vanish. Now, if we plot one of these partial wave amplitudes, then we see the following. So the orange line is the result from general relativity. The blue line is the one that we get from stellar gravity. For energies below the Planck scale, say, the two constructions agree. Then at some point, stellar gravity activates an additional degree of freedom. So this is a massive spin 2 particle giving this contribution here. This is reflected by the resonance in the amplitude, and at high energies, stellar gravity amplitude will go to a constant, while the GR amplitude increases. So we are able to tame the UV growth of the amplitude at the expense of introducing an additional massive degree of freedom. Now, we can also be more general about this framework. So by specifying the gravitational form factors, we can incorporate effective field theory. In this case, these will be logarithmic functions. Stellar gravity we discussed, there they are constant. Infinite derivative gravity, they are essentially exponential. So what we have here is a tool in which we can study quantum gravity programs actually in a unified way. So the three topics here, they should just be seen as examples to illustrate the scope of the framework. Now, can we fit the physics of asymptotic safety in this framework? So in principle, what we want to have is the following blueprint for an asymptotically safe amplitude. So first, the amplitude should become scale-free at high energies. So that's the idea of having an interacting randomization group fixed point. Physically, the requirements that underlie this is unitarity, and the cross-section should not grow without any bound. Now, in contrast to stellar gravity, there should be no new massive decrease of freedom or ghost particles. And finally, we want the amplitude to be local at high energies. Now, can we come up with a set of form factors that actually meet these requirements? The answer to this question is yes. So we have to work on two frontiers. So first, we introduce form factors that modify the graviton propagators. So here's the set of form factors that we need for the spin 2 part of the propagator, spin 0 part. And then it turns out that just modifying the graviton propagator is not sufficient. You also need scalar self-interactions. And these scalar self-interactions, they need to talk to what you do in the graviton propagator. And once you set up this all consistently, then you are able to meet the requirements up here. So we can follow the logic that we had for stellar gravity. We can compute the partial wave amplitude associated with the phi-phi chi-chi scattering. This guy is given here. What you see is this is the GR amplitude dressed up by an additional factor. Again, it's instructive to compare this to general relativity. You see at low energies, the two scattering amplitudes will agree. At high energy, the form factor amplitudes will flatten out and become constant at asymptotically high energies. In comparison to stellar gravity, what we are missing is the resonance peak indicating the ghost decrease of freedom. And in fact, you can check that there are no massive decrease of freedom associated with the amplitudes that you just constructed. Now, this is what you did in the graviton sector. If you look at the cross scattering, phi chi goes to phi chi, it turns out the modification that you introduced is not enough. You still have a divergence of the amplitude in the T channel. And here, the Kähler self interactions play a crucial role to actually ameliorate the divergence behavior. So once you include them properly, you can check that your amplitudes stay bounded and become scale free in all kinematical regions. So this is illustrated in the diagram here. We have the energy, the T channel scattering. In the big diagram, you go to a constant and you check that you don't introduce new divergences in the S channel. And also this is a K, you still flow to a constant. Now, how did the model do this? So at this point, it's instructive to look at the pole structure of the propagators that we just constructed. So this is sitting up here. Here's the example of the spin 2 graviton propagator. You have a pole associated with a massless degree of freedom. So this is sitting in the center of the plane. This ensures that at low energies, you have the decrease of freedom of GR. And then you have the stressing factor. The stressing factor introduces an infinite tower of poles precisely at imaginary squared momentum. Asymptotically, this is a Ratchet-type behavior. So the distance of the poles become linear for large n. Now, this resembles what people have done in terms of Liebig constructions. So, but the difference is that here the poles are not massive. You move them to the imaginary axis, and with this you can actually avoid the causality violation that are typically associated with the Liebig models. Now, where's the fixed point in this construction? So the fixed point needs to supply the relations between the propagators and vertices that are crucial for such a construction. And indeed, several first principle computations, especially in the context of effective universality, have indicated that we actually have such relations supplied by a fixed point. The second takeaway message is about the quantum corrected amplitudes, and the construction proposed in the Donoghue paper. And it's clear that the proposal done there has to fail. The simple idea of identifying the momentum of the Wilsonian running coupling constant with a physical momentum will never be enough information to construct all the amplitude information that you need in all scattering processes. So the map from a running coupling constant to the form factors that completely specify the effective action can never be one-to-one. So that brings me to the conclusions of the talk. So in terms of the structure of the asymptotic safety program, so you can summarize this in a cartoon version. So we have the Reuter fixed point controlling the high energy behavior. We use the Wetterich equation to derive the quantum effective action from this one. And once we have this object, we can ask sensible questions about observable phenomena or fundamental requirements. Now, in the spirit of the conference, one can then just notice that part of the diagram will stay robust if we change the microscopic physics input. So you can do the same game for other types of quantum gravity theories, like causal dynamical triangulations, causal Z theory, loop quantum gravity, and infinite derivative gravity. So the idea is that having probably different physical input at this stage will give you a different quantum effective action, but the idea that this can then be related to phenomena and fundamental requirements still stays the same. And I think this links well with the discussion session that we will have on this on Thursday. So this is the end of my talk. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Frank. I will clap for everybody while everybody else can use one of the reaction buttons. And thanks, Frank, for staying perfectly in time. So we have a number of questions already in the chat, but feel free to also use the raised hand button to ask your questions. And Ted had two questions already during the talk. So Ted, if you'd like to unmute yourself to ask your questions. Ted, I'm going to unmute you to so you can ask your questions.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Yeah, one was just a terminology. Back when you introduced the effective action, you called it the effective average action, and I didn't expect the word average, and so it confused me what you were talking about.
Yes, let me go to this slide. So the effective average action is the object that appears in Wettrich's equation. So this is the one where you compute the Wilsonian running from. And if you drop the average and just make it the effective action, that's a limit that you have to take on the effective average action. So the effective average action contains partial information about quantum fluctuations, while the effective actions contains all the information.
Right, but why don't we need all the information?
We need all the information. This is precisely the point two that I wanted to make here. Physics needs all this information. And in principle, you should see the effective average action as a tool to compute the effective action. So in principle, the standard—
I guess I'm asking, what is the word average? What are you averaging over?
You average over quantum fluctuations with momenta larger than the scale k.
Okay, so I wouldn't call that average. You're just integrating them out, but you're not averaging over a probability distribution.
Let me say, I didn't invent this name.
Okay.
So I was not a grad student when people invented this.
Okay. Now, much more importantly, I missed the absolutely key point of your whole talk, I think, which was avoiding the pitfalls of the derivative expansion by switching to this curvature expansion with the form factors.
Yes.
So the form factors are functions of Laplacian operators. So you still have a higher derivative action. So how are you avoiding unitarity and negative energy problems?
So typically, let's explain the example in terms of Ostrogradsky's theorem. So there you have essentially a finite number of higher derivative terms. And what you can do, if this is the case, then you can write the propagators that you get in terms of, I should have the formula somewhere here, the massless propagator minus a massive propagator. And the massive part of the propagator gives you the problem. But this only works if you are dealing with a form factor that is a finite order polynomial. The proof breaks down if you put in an entire function. So in this way, you can ditch the problem that you have for stellar gravity, where you say, okay, this is a constant function. So essentially what you want to ensure with choosing your function f are two things. You want to ameliorate the growth, you want to improve on the fall off of your gravitational propagators at high energies, but you want to do this without introducing a new massive degree of freedom like in this plot. And with entire functions, you can do this.
Okay, so I would now call some of the other questions and also give people a chance who've not asked that many questions before, and therefore would ask Henry first to unmute himself and ask his question. Okay, maybe I can read it out.
There we go.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm unmuted. Thanks. Thanks for the review. If I was interested in trying to complete gravity as some in terms of quantum field theory, then I'd usually think the Weinberg-Wind theorem is an obstruction. I mean, I know Weinberg was an advocate, and I think he probably knew about the Weinberg-Wind theorem, so I'm missing something. But I just wanted to understand how this scenario is compatible with the Weinberg-Wind theorem, or how it constrains what the theory can look like. It states that if you have you're familiar with so the Weinberg-Witten theorem says that if you have a quantum field theory with a conserved Poincaré covariant stress tensor, then you can't have massless particles with helicity bigger than one.
No, I would have to think about how this gets avoided.
Okay, thanks.
So this might be a good moment to advertise that Frank will also be answering further questions in the Slack channel later on. So this might be one for the Slack channel. In the meantime, I would call Luca to ask his question.
Thank you. Hi. So I have, let's say, many questions about your choice of the form factor. But first of all, why do you require locality for this form factor at high energy? Because basically you have some kind of, so for low momentum, you have local operators, then you have some non-local jump, and then at the high energy, you have again locality, right? For this choice that you make for the form factor. But which is the real reason for this jump, basically? Also, would you officially interpret this jump? Because I would expect that we have also no locality at high energy, right? Some kind of non-local behavior that would be important.
I'm pretty sure you can do also with non-localities at high energies, but you are not required to do so.
Okay, but there is some kind of freedom, right? It's still arbitrary.
Yes.
Okay.
But in principle, if you impose that you are scale-free at high energies, then this will do the job.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how unique is the choice of this function with this jump, let's say?
I have to say not unique. So you can pretty much probably construct an entire class of functions that satisfy the criteria that I outlined should be asymptotic safety. Mm-hmm. What is actually surviving for all of your choices is the pole structure that you have in this diagram here. And any choice of functions that realizes such a pole structure would probably do the job. So in essence, you are only making statements about really high energy behavior and how you interpolate to low energies. There's a lot of freedom, definitely.
So let's say one next step would be to try to constrain this class of function, right?
You would like to have a first principle construction from whatever you want to put at the microscopic level. But at the moment, it was proof of principle that you can find something at the level of the quantum effective action that does the job for you.
Okay, I see. Thank you.
Then there is a question from Navam.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if in the gravity-mediated scattering that you studied, if you can sum over ladder diagrams like one does in the iconal approximation.
Yes, this is encoded. So essentially, you can detect the contribution of a ladder diagrams. They will appear in the scalar self-interaction. So in principle, the amplitude that we constructed comes from two parts. It's the gravity-mediated part of the amplitude. This only has contributions from with spin 0 and spin 2. And a ladder diagram should have all even spins. And then they appear in the scalar self-interactions. So there you can see that only the scalar self-interactions give contributions to A4, A6, and so on.
So you say these are already non-trivially incorporated. So all...
Yes.
To all orders.
Yes. So okay. In principle, what I have here in terms of A4 should capture the contribution of ladder diagrams.
I see. Thank you.
I think we still have 30 seconds for a quick question by Steve and a quick answer. So I think there was a hand. No?
Oh.
Yeah. Go.
Am I unmuted now?
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah, so a quick question. So you find at very high energies that various loop diagrams become important. It was just mentioned the iconal, but there are other diagrams that correspond to, in fact, important long distance behavior at very high energies, things like black hole formation. And you would expect that to obscure point-like behavior and the kinds of operators you're talking about, which are basically summarizing that. So how do you sort of avoid that issue or address that issue in this program?
So I think I don't want to have intermediate black holes. That's the simple answer.
But how do you avoid them? If you look at very, very high energy scattering, super Planckian scattering, then
yes, you would expect I know that you want to have your strong coupling region. I studied your diagrams explicitly, but I think if you decrease the strength of the gravitational interactions, also in the forward scattering limit, you never get into, you could avoid getting into a region where you actually form a black hole in the scattering process. Essentially, you soften the strength of gravity at short distances.
Well, not so sure about that, but maybe there's a panel later. Maybe we can talk more about this.
Okay, so we've run out of time, so let's thank Frank again.